So let's understand about the negotiation process, how it goes. Usually while negotiating, there is going to be some target point and some resistance point. Beyond this resistance point, people are not going to say yes, and people will try to achieve the target point if possible. Between the two, usually the final negotiation is done. So let's understand how the negotiation is done. The process of negotiation will be preparation and planning. Then definition of ground rules, then clarification and justification, then bargaining and problem solving, and finally closure and implementation. So what involves preparation and planning? During this stage, first both the parties should gather adequate information. Basically, what are the parties' goals? What are the issues for negotiation? What are the reasons for negotiation, what for we are negotiating, and what will happen if the negotiation turn out to be like this, what will be the change in relationship between the two? That also one should think in advance, and one should build the strategy accordingly. So let's take that example of collective bargaining. What are the preparation and planning to be done by both the parties? The union people, they should see what exactly is the salary structure that is there for their workers at present. What is the inflation that is occurring? What is the DA that is there based on this inflation, whether it is adequately covering that or not? Based on the job, based on the skills required for this job, whether the salaries that the workers are getting are justifiable, the differential between the two based on semi-skilled, skilled, etc., or the technical aspect and all, whether it is proper or not, whether people are getting adequate holidays, whether people are getting adequate overtime or not. They should compare the salary structure, wage and salary administration structure of similar other companies also. For example, L&T is engineering company. So they should compare the engineering company of Godrej or BHEL, etc., to see what kind of salary differential is there between the two companies' workers, or Mahindra and Mahindra. And if they have done recently, the COD has been done, what's the increment that has been given to those workers, and what's the overall salary level for them in the present negotiation that they have done for their collective bargaining. So that kind of homework they should do. So proper information gathering should be done by them. They should find out what is the goal of them. So what should be overall the increment given to their how much salary should be increased, how much bonus should be there, what is their goals, what are the basic issues to be discussed in this. They should be prepared for that, be it for the salary, be it for the holidays, be it for the leave, be it for the sickness or mediclaim. They should find out exactly for what all reasons they are going to negotiate. They will find out what are the priorities and what are the things which are not that important. Of course, they are going to put forth those things also. But they will be giving less importance to those issues while negotiating. And after negotiation, if they have achieved what they want, in what way they have achieved, what was the resistance they found on the part of the management's behavior, and if that is achieved also, they should also think of what will be the relation between the union and management later which will be important for them for future developments also. So they should start building proper strategy for defining all those things. Similarly, on the other side, the management also should find out what are likely to be the issues on the part of the union, how much is the profitability they are getting, how much they can spare for increase in the salary, what is the overall increase in the salary in the other similar organizations, what is the profit level of those organizations. So at a percentage of what that they are going to increase the salary, all those things they should collect proper information, tabulate it, analyze it, so that while negotiating they can use this information to convince the union leaders regarding what kind of salary they can offer. They are also going to find out what are the top priorities for them and what are comparatively not those important things where they are not going to have so much of monetary constraints or so much of part of their budget will go towards that. Then they should define the ground rules, and they should also find out what will be the strategy they are going to follow while discussing and while doing the negotiation. And they also should know what will be the relationship after negotiation between them and the union. So this is regarding preparation and planning. Then comes definition of ground rules. That means who would the negotiators be? So they are going to decide who will sit in the meetings for the negotiation. The VPHR or the IR person, or some of the managers of the top managers of their departments who have got the knack of handling those union people in a better way. They should decide about at what time and which place they are going to have these meetings, what is the procedure they are going to follow in case there is a deadlock. They may flag off certain things and say that, okay, we are going to discuss these things in the next meeting, but let us continue about the other things today. So these are the ground rules they are going to decide and tell this in the first meeting to the union leaders. Similar union leaders are also going to decide who are the people, whether the union leaders, say president and secretary will sit, or the vice president and secretary will sit, or whether the affiliation is there with certain political party, representative from that will sit. In which meeting, maybe initially they are not going to sit. So all those ground rules should be defined well in advance. Then comes clarification and justification. Whenever certain things, a charter of demand, say, are put, there are, say, 25 demands that the union is putting forward. They should provide documentation for this support, that why they are asking this much. They should clarify certain aspects with the management people, ask them, and vice versa, certain things which the management is telling, they are providing certain information regarding the relevant aspects. They should also clarify if the union people are asking for that, and they should justify why they are telling these things. Then the crux of the negotiation process starts. That is bargaining and problem solving, where they are going to formulate exactly what's the problem, what are the various solutions that can be there, the best alternative they want to put forward, and what are the key steps to be followed during that. Say whatever things are comparatively minor where both the parties can easily come to a conclusion, they should be taken first, so that at least the rapport is built well and the resistance is less and people start on a positive step. Then what are the concessions from both sides that can be given during the negotiation? One should go on finding out and telling that. Suppose union is telling that we want 15% rise in the salary, and the management is telling that we can give only 8%. So gradually they will come back to 12, they will come back to 10, and probably at 11%, or from 9 to 10%, ultimately it may be settled. So what are the concessions from both sides that are likely to occur? That will be discussed with justification. They are going to compare the profitability they have got in this year as compared to the other organizations also, and the percentage of increase they are getting in other organizations, and all they are going to discuss and justify their point. And that's how gradually the problem solving will come near. And finally, there will be closure and implementation, where they formalize everything, write down everything, both the parties will discuss about how to implement these things and how to monitor these things, and then they are going to sign the agreement on both the sides, and then it will be going to the registrar for the industry, so that finally it is signed and sealed in a way, and they agree, both the parties are agreeing and telling that, confirming that we are going to implement this in this particular way. So whenever two parties are meeting and negotiating, it is not always that they are able to arrive at the conclusion and they are able to sort out all the problems in the negotiations and arrive at the final steps of implementation. When there is a deadlock, there is a likelihood that the union may go on strike if they are totally disgusted with the way the management is handling those bargaining, collective bargaining, or with any other group, or between two people, whenever they are negotiating, at times the party will go away from that and there is a deadlock. No further negotiations are possible. In that case, one can go in for third party negotiations. Third party negotiations can be in the form of a mediator, an arbitrator, or a conciliator. So we'll understand about all these three ways of third party negotiations in some detail. What we mean by mediator? A mediator is a third party who enables negotiation with the help of logic. They listen to both the parties and they rationalize their way of thinking in a proper direction. They try to coax one party if they are totally irrational to make some logical conclusion and try to ask something which is reasonable, and they recommend certain options of how to arrive at the common platform and arrive at the solution of this problem, so that the conflict will be resolved and proper negotiation will go towards achievement of the finalization. It may help in labor management or in certain low intensity conflicts. If the intensity of the conflict is not very high, then the mediator can definitely rationalize things and help to make the other, both the parties understand exactly certain negative aspects of them and try to arrive at a conclusion which will be helpful for both, and usually the negotiations become successful. However, if the intensity of the conflict is high, or if both the parties are very, very resistant to change, then one may go in for arbitrator. Here the arbitrator has got the authority to enforce an agreement, and hence both the parties will have to follow the guidelines given by the arbitrator to achieve finally the resolution of the conflict by negotiation. Now these arbitrators can be either voluntary arbitration or it can be compulsory arbitration. In case of voluntary arbitration, both the parties are agreeing to some respected person in the society. He can be some retired judge or from some labor commissioner, ex labor commissioner, etc. And they can sit together and arrive at a proper conclusion, and they are going to listen to that arbitrator the way he is sorting out their problems. While in case of, as per the Industrial Disputes Act, if these things are not sorted out, they may go into the labor court where compulsory arbitration may be done, adjudication may be done. And the third is conciliation. This is the third party that is trusted, and it provides an informal communication link between both the negotiating parties. They not only engage in just coming at some midway by both the parties and recommending them while coaxing certain aspects on the one party or the other, but they themselves actually do the fact finding, understand exactly what are the messages passed forward by both the parties, and then based on their analysis, experience, logic, etc., they are going to convince both the parties regarding these aspects to arrive at a common base whereby they can conclude their negotiations. However, it may not be totally enforceable. With this, we have learned the various aspects of power, politics, conflict, and negotiation. There is one more aspect, that is inter-group behavior. Well, whenever there are two groups or more groups who are going to be interdependent on each other, there is likelihood of some or the other conflict occurring, as in individuals also. For example, there are departments where marketing department and the sales department and the accounts department. Usually the sales department is interested in selling more and more, even on credit, so that they can show that the sale has increased and their performance appraisal is based on that. However, the accounts department is interested in realizing the monetary aspect of those sales at earliest, so that the organization is going to be benefited by these sales. Otherwise, if they are not credit worthy, if after selling they do not pay the money, then organization can go at a great loss. And hence usually there is a tussle between both the parties, both the groups, the sales group or the marketing group and the accounts group. So they should sit together and arrive at conclusion that how the sales group also are going to be seeing first the credit worthiness of their clients and then only sell them on credit. And the accounts department also should be slightly liberal of giving them at least 1 to 2 months of credit, and they should not insist that within 15 days they have to give the money, otherwise the sales will not be that high. And they have to calculate how much extra should be given in case they are giving 15 days late or things like that. And that's how intergroup behavior is going to come into play. So one has to think about, whenever there are groups, the thinking of those groups will be different. And when they are interdependent, one should understand that there are likelihood of conflicts where the negotiation is likely to come in resolution of these conflicts. And at times, if they are behaving little more adamantly and they are not coming to consensus, in that case what can be done? One may make the leader or the head of the department of both the groups as common, and hence naturally it is his responsibility to see to it that both the groups are coherently working and ultimately the organization is benefited. So that's how intergroup behavior can be altered, And in case of organization development also, whenever there are two groups who are functioning totally tangentially, in which it is difficult for them to work interdependently and lot of conflicts are occurring, in that case, there can be off the job, say, outside the organization, both the groups may be called and they may be sitting together in a different group, and the facilitator is going to use the expertise he has got to make both the groups understand each other and change their behavior in a better way. For example, suppose there are two groups who are sitting at a distance of say 2 feet away. The facilitator goes to one group and tells the whole group to write down about the positive aspects of the other group. Similarly, it tells group B, suppose there are group A and group B. He goes to the group A and tells them to write down about positive aspects about group B. And every individual from that group is supposed to write that based on the past experience and all. Similarly, he tells group B people, without anybody in the group A people listening to this, that they should write about positive aspects of group A. Each and every person should write that. And then both the things he takes together, and he goes to group A and tells whatever positive aspects group B has told to him about group A, and vice versa. In that case, the mental block that was there between the two groups will dissolve, and they will think positive about each other, and they will think to bring out the solutions of the problems easily. And of course, we have already seen how the same common leader for both the groups also, whenever he is there, it is going to help in better resolution of the problems, intergroup conflicts that are occurring. He will be responsible for doing all that in a better way. So that's how intergroup behavior one has to understand and try to resolve those conflicts in a positive way, and win-win situations should occur. There should be full coherence and collaboration between the two groups ultimately, so that the organizational goals are achieved in much better way. So people are going to work effectively and efficiently ultimately to lead to individual, organizational and societal goals achieved in a better way. And the organization remains sustainable, and growth of the organization occurs for future also. Thank you.